I'm Leonard Lopate. Welcome back to my show. Paul Motion's been called the Picasso of jazz drummers. At the age of 75, critics are saying he's continuing to operate at a creative peak. And you can hear for yourself this Wednesday through Saturday when Mr. Motion performs at Birdland on West 44th Street. I'm especially honored to have this great drummer join me today. Hello.
Hello.
You've been working mainly with three groups that you head up, but here at Birdland, you'll be with pianist Bobo Stenson's trio,
right.
Along with bassist Anders Jorman. It's almost like a return to the Bill Evans trio, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. It seems like I would get involved with the piano, bass, drums trios often, somehow. Somebody even said to me one time, a drummer friend of mine from high school said, saw me playing with Bill Evans in a trio setting at a place. It was called a composer room on 50-something Street and 6th Avenue. And he said, oh, yeah, you're a trio drummer.
Well, certain drummers get that reputation. Lewis Nash, Kenny Washington. And maybe it's because you are sensitive to what other people in the group are playing and you're not just overpowering and doing what you do.
Could be, I suppose. Could be.
Well, is that important to you? Because you've since Bill Evans especially, you mm-hmm. have definitely been in groups where there is a sense that everybody is kind of equal. It isn't, you're not just the guy providing the beat.
Right. I think that started with Bill Evans.
That interaction?
Right. I mean, seems like before that time it was always a piano player being accompanied by bass and drums. But with Bill and Scott LaFaro at that time, late 50s, I guess it was, it opened up new doors.
And that was his idea? That's the way he wanted the group to be?
No, we never talked
about it. That way?
No, we didn't talk about it. We really didn't. We just played, and it seemed like the magic happened, and it was kind of special because of the three people that were involved and the talent of each person and just the way it came together, like pieces of a puzzle are just fitted together, man. It worked.
Well, in the case of Bo Stenson, there seems to be a really eclectic repertoire. We heard Send in the Clowns, but
right.
You also play Ornette Coleman's Race Face, and you play something from Purcell.
Uh-huh.
So
right.
don't
yeah,
want to
right.
get bored.
No, that was interesting. It's a nice record. It's a very interesting record. Yeah.
Do you find yourself playing differently depending on what group you're in?
No. Somebody asked me that the other day, too. No. I don't know. Seems like I'm into music. It's all music to me. I don't care if it's a trio, a quartet, a big band, or I don't treat it each situation any different than previous ones or ones to show up.
But there has to be some difference for you when you're playing in the trio with Bill Frisell and Joe Lovano. That's a guitar and saxophone.
Sax, right.
Then you have the big band or
right.
the Paul Motion band. Three right. guitarists, two tenor saxophonists, bass and drums.
I just added another bass player to that band.
Two bass players.
Right.
What does a second bass player add?
I don't know. We haven't played yet. We'll see. I've been wanting to do that for a while.
Well, three guitarists itself,
yeah.
it seems like.
Yeah.
This is really strange instrumentation. Is this you played a lot with guitarists? Is that because you began as a guitarist yourself?
Well, you know, I just told that story to it's funny. I never really did that. I just I started with guitar, but I wanted to play the guitar because I wanted to be a cowboy. I saw cowboy movies, guys playing guitars, Gene Autry and that kind of stuff. And that's
growing
what I
up in Providence, Rhode
yeah,
Island.
Right. And that's what I wanted to do. So then I signed up for lessons. And when I went for the lesson, I walked into this room and there were like 10 or 15 guitar players and they had guitars on their laps playing Hawaiian guitars. I said, no, I don't want to do that. And I walked out. That's the extent of my guitar playing.
But you seem to have a real affinity for guitar players.
Yeah, I guess so.
And you've maintained long-term relations with a number of different groups and players. But... Mm-hmm. Not, but you don't just have one.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like most people, they'll put together a band, and
right.
then that's what they do for a long time until
yeah.
somebody leaves, another
okay.
person is added. But you
yeah.
seem to want different kinds of combinations.
Yeah, variety.
Is that what it is?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm enjoying it all, man. I really am. I mean, like I just love music, and I don't care about the setting. I'm just going to put together whatever I feel like and go ahead and play.
You also compose more than most drummers. I know
drummers
have
it.
Composed over the years, but how many of your compositions will you do in a typical set?
More and more lately. I mean, that's what happened with the band that I just talked about that I added the bass player. I mean, it started out as an electric bebop band with just two electric guitars, electric bass and drums, and it keeps growing. And I added a saxophone, then there were two saxophones, and now it's the three guitars, and now it's going to be two basses.
But no piano?
No.
Do you compose on the piano?
I do, yeah.
And I'm sure that's something you learned because you had to learn if you want to write music.
Yeah, I mean, when ECM Records offered me a recording of my own, that's when I realized that I should get myself together and write some music and stuff. I started studying piano, and I'm not really a learned composer. I sit at the piano, and I'll fool around and try different things, and then if some idea, a few notes pops out to me and gets my attention, I'll try and develop that, and eventually it'll turn into a piece of music.
Do you play piano well enough to perform on it the way Charlie Mingus did?
No.
Paul Motion is my guest. He is, it's okay because he's probably the most musical drummer there is, and he has a number of albums on Garden of Eden. I have The Room Above Her. Those are on ECM. He'll be playing as part of the Bobo Stenson Trio this Wednesday through Saturday at Birdland at 315 West 44th Street between 8th and 9th Avenues. And if you want more information, I'll tell you all about that later. It must be odd playing at Birdland when you played at the original Birdland, right.
Yeah, right. I haven't played there for a while. It's a couple of years since I've been there, but I like it. It's a nice venue. It's a nice club. It has nice sound, the acoustics, the room. It's really nice. I like it.
When you were at the original Birdland, you played with a lot of different people. In the 50s and 60s, you were quite busy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that was great education, being with Stan
sure
Getz and then Lenny Tristano, Zoot Sims. Mm-hmm. You were with Thelonious Monk for a while?
Thelonious Monk, I played one day when there was a place called The Open Door down in the Village. And I played because I went there to see. I knew Monk was playing. I went there to see him, and Bob Reisner was the promoter at the time, and he saw me and he knew I played drums. He'd seen me around town. He said, "Paul, Arthur Taylor was supposed to play, but he didn't show up. If you go home, get your drums, you can play with Monk." So that was the first time.
You must have been excited.
Oh,
about
I sure
that.
Was. And so I did that, and then I played again with Monk for a week in Boston. It was around 1960. Those are the only times.
But still, it took a little adjusting, didn't it? Because of the
eccentricity
of the
approach. I was scared to death. I really didn't know. I mean, I knew about Monk. I knew, but I wasn't that familiar with his music. I had to do a lot of guesswork, but I learned a lot.
He didn't give you a lot of direction?
No, none at all.
What about some of the others? I mean, because when you play with somebody like Monk or Coleman Hawkins or Sonny Rollins or John Coltrane, no matter how experienced you are, you're playing with somebody who you've also been a fan of.
Right.
So how do you get past that? Or don't you?
I don't know. I just, keep my fingers crossed, do the best I can. I got to play
don't
with...
Don't screw up is the rule.
Right. I got to play with Coltrane at Birdland because... Elvin Jones couldn't be found, and I was playing with Mose Allison at the time, opposite Coltrane. And Pee Wee Marquette, who was the MC at the time, said, no lulls. When one band comes off, the other one's got to go on. And, sometimes you're standing by the bandstand waiting to play, and Pee Wee came up to me and said, you got to play with Coltrane because we can't find Elvin. I said, man, I'm not going to play with Coltrane. He said, no, they talked me into it, so I got to play couple of songs, and then Elvin showed up and did the rest. But that was a great opportunity for me. And same thing happened with Sonny Rollins. I played one night. It was a Monday night. It was like the off night of the regular bands, and I got to play with Sonny Rollins one night. So those were all great experiences for me. I learning experiences.
I saw Coltrane at Birdland, where Pee Wee Marquette came up in the middle of one of those long solos mm-hmm. that Train played, because it was not just a matter of going from one band to the other. They had 20-minute sets.
Oh, right.
And so there's John Coltrane playing, and Pee Wee Marquette says, John Coltrane, ladies and gentlemen, John Coltrane. Yeah. And Train is looking at him like, are you crazy? Get the heck away. And there was kind of a war of wills, and eventually Train just ended and got off the stage. Yeah. Pee Wee Marquette ruled.
Wow.
But you only played with those guys once in a while, but you played with Bill Evans for how many years?
Oh, close to 10, I guess.
And then Keith Jarrett?
Yeah, it was another maybe 10 years.
And even Arlo Guthrie for a little while. What, a couple of years with Arlo Guthrie.
Right.
What was that? Just wanted to do something different?
No, I got the call. The bass player at the time with Arlo was Bob Arkin, who was the brother of the actor Alan Arkin, mm-hmm. and Bob was the bass player, and Arlo Guthrie had this record, kind of a hit record with this Alice's Restaurant thing, and so they were trying to put together a group to go on tour, and the bass player knew of my work with Bill Evans, and he had them call me, so they called me, and I auditioned. I went to the office of Arlo's manager, and I played with them, and they liked me and hired me, and that's how that came about. But one thing that happened out of that was that I got to play at Woodstock, and was in August of 1969, quite an experience.
You were at the famous Woodstock concert.
Right.
There aren't too many jazz drummers who can make that claim.
No, I guess not.
But you are a guy who seems to have a certain sense of consistency. You play with the same musicians over and over again. You've lived in the same apartment, I gather, 37 years.
Something like that, yeah.
You've had the same ride cymbals since the 1950s.
That's true, yeah. Somebody asked me about that one time, and I don't remember. There's one cymbal that I still play that I had back with Bill Evans, and I don't even know where I got it or when, but it still works.
Why do you think people change all the time?
What do you mean?
I mean, why would somebody get rid of a cymbal? A cymbal will sound... Well, it never changes sound, does it?
Well, I guess they want to change. You know, maybe they get bored with the sound, or they want a different sound, or try something else. I've used lots of cymbals, you know, during my time playing, but that one particular one is still good. It sounds good, and I'll keep it until it, you know, falls apart, or I fall apart.
Well, those cymbals are made by Zildjian, and I wonder whether that in any way connects you, your own Armenian-Turkish heritage.
I don't know. I never thought about that. You know, I just, even when I first got a Zildjian cymbal, I didn't know if he was Armenian or Irish or what.
I think he was Armenian-Turkish.
Right.
You also are... I don't know why people make such a big thing about the fact that you don't put padding on your bass drum the way most drummers do.
Yeah, no, that's the first thing I do when I get drums. I take all the padding out of all the drums, the mufflers, because they muffle the sound. The natural sound of the drum is not with that muffler in there, not for me anyway.
I hear that an important moment in your career was when you were watching Max Roach.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn from that experience?
Well, I remember going to see Max at the time. I think it was one particular... Well, I went to see him often, but there was one particular time he was playing at a club. It was called Basin Street. And he had Clifford Brown with him at the time. And
either Harold Land or Sonny Rollins.
Right. And I was with this bass player, a friend of mine, Al Cotton, who really helped me a lot. And he said, look at Max. He said, watch him when he's playing. He said, man, it's like he uses his whole body. He's moving his whole body. It's like exercising all parts of his body as he's playing. He said, it's all part of playing. And that was interesting, man. It taught me a lot. And I think about that.
And you now use your whole body?
Well, yeah, it's all one. The drum set, me, the cymbals, everything. It's just one. It's all connected.
I've heard that you've written an autobiography, or you've been working on an
autobiography. Well, yeah. Trying.
Will it ever get published?
I don't know. I don't know at this point. I tried it, and it's been years and years and years. I just would write stuff. And I don't know what I'm going to do about it.
So... Well, we all look forward to it because you probably have incredible stories to tell.
It's a lot of stories. A lot of stories I don't remember. Try and put them down. I mean, somebody asked me one time, I've told this story a lot too. They said, did you ever play with the trumpet player Jimmy Nottingham? And I said, no, I never played with him. Then they showed me a picture of me playing with him in a book by the guitar player Billy Bauer. Mm-hmm. And there I am playing with Billy Bauer, Jimmy Nottingham, and I don't remember it. And there's a photo.
That would have been when you were connected to Lenny Tristano, wouldn't it?
Probably, yeah. I guess it was in the 50s. And then this morning I was talking to somebody about doing a commercial for television with Benny Goodman. And I remember it, but we didn't play. It was for Esso or Exxon or one of those things, and we didn't involve any playing. And they sort of silhouetted the band out, but not Benny Goodman, of course. And I remember telling the bass player, "Let's start playing, man. We'll play some blues or something. Maybe we can get Benny to play." But he wouldn't play. He didn't play with it. So I mean, that was 1958, man.
Paul Motion is at the at Birdland. Wednesday, that's the day after tomorrow, through Saturday. That's shows at 9 and 11 p.m. For more information, you can visit our website at wnyc.org. He'll be with the Bobo Stinson Trio. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, you're welcome.